Jasper Mirabile Jr. of Jasper's Italian Restaurant is giving his famous mozzarella presentation for a delighted table of two. They're snapping photos while he kneads together curds and whey in a bowl of hot water until they form a ball, which he then stretches into ribbons.
All right. At this point, we're just stretching and pulling. The term mozza means to tear, fiore di latte, the flour to milk. The freshest, creamiest, silkiest cheese you'll ever eat.
From tableside service like that to an old-fashioned dessert cart, Jasper's has a handful of traditions, old and new, that families all over Kansas City have come to expect. And Jasper himself is quite the showman. But there are chapters of his story you still might not know or might have forgotten. So we're starting today's show on Italian food with Jasper here in the studio. Hi, Jasper.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
That mozzarella demonstration is actually a new tradition, right?
It is. 8 years ago, we started it in the dining room. I was in Italy, and I saw my family was in Italy, and we saw a gentleman making the mozzarella tableside, but he was in the corner. He really wasn't next to the table. And ding, 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 you know, the bell rang in my head, and I said, I got to do this.
What appealed to you about it?
Well, just watching someone, you know, pulling fresh mozzarella. You know, if you go to a cheese factory, as a Wisconsin chef ambassador, I used to travel the country and teach people how to make fresh cheese. But go into the different cheese factories and watch people pull cheese. Visiting Naples and Sorrento and some of the cheese factories, the small artisan places, and watch them pull. It's really something else. You don't see it often. And I had never seen it in the United States at a restaurant before.
And you wanted to bring it out of the corner and right to people's tableside. That seems like very much your style.
Well, you know, my father was known for tableside cooking. He was one of the first in Kansas City back in 1954 to do tableside Caesar, flambé steaks, crepes Grand Vafour, bananas Foster, cherries Jubilee, etc. And when we sold the restaurant in 1997 and we moved to the new location, we did not do any tableside. So for me, it was something, you know, where I can have more interaction with my customers. I mean, I work the floor. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I work the floor. I'm back in the kitchen. I come back out on the floor. And, you know, I have a great team behind me, of course, so I can do these things. And this way I can actually talk with my customers and they can watch me make something. It's good and it's bad because sometimes we can get a little backed up when 25 tables wanted at one time.
Well, so these are some new traditions, but the Jasper story goes really far back. It begins in 1954 with your grandmother's recipes.
Exactly. And it's funny because this morning I was going through some paperwork and some old books, and I found some of Nana's recipes in a little book, which I brought you today here. And that, I think that's kind of where, you know, where everything began, but not really in 1954. It goes even back further, you know, with my family and my father. My grandmother and my grandfather had a little grocery store, and my dad used to make lunch and put it on the back of his bicycle at 8 years old and bring it down to the store for them. So that, you know, the tradition kind of just continues. And as my father said, when we were opening the new restaurant, he passed away 1 month before we opened up. But, you know, we had come full circle, you know, from humble beginnings, and we were back on 103rd Street with just lasagna and pasta and comfort food, which I was criticized when I first opened up, when our family first opened up 103rd and State Line.
For specializing in the comfort foods?
Yeah, because, you know, we didn't have the all the flambé dishes, and we didn't have all the tableside and the tuxedoed waiters and the tableside, you know, the maitre d' and all. And this is what my father actually wanted. And we went back to the old school and how it all began. And lo and behold, it caught on.
Take me back in a little more detail to how it all began.
Well, in 1954, my father purchased a small little bar at 75th and Warnell. It was called Rose's Bar. He had a chance to purchase that or today where the Savoy Grill is at. And he decided to go south. Everybody was a critic. Everybody told him, you're making a big mistake. You're going past the county line, 75th Street. The streetcar stopped right there. You'll never make it out south. Who goes out south? And it was a dirt road, and he decided to go for it. It was April 1st, 1954, and it's always been a big deal in our family, April 1st, April Fool's Day, because my father always said I had the last laugh on April Fool's Day.
Didn't your grandfather also own the original ship?
My father had the original ship. In the early 50s. I just wrote a story for it in the Kansas City Star, as a matter of fact, about that. You know, they've come back now down in the West Bottoms. And but the original ship, my father was a partner there with another gentleman. And,
explain what that was.
So the ship was an old bar. Now, the article, I didn't put it in my article, but the original story goes, when my father returned from the Atlantic. Well, it was after the war, but my father really didn't serve that long. He didn't do, you know, wasn't out there fighting or anything like that. So he came back, and there was a bar available. My dad wanted to get in the business. My grandfather had another bar on 12th and Troost called the Lucky Tavern. And then my father opened up the ship, and he sold the ship and opened
with
up.
With a nautical theme.
Exactly. And
very thorough nautical theme.
I mean, I'm
theme.
Telling you, and it's so great for me to walk back in there today and see the original walls. I mean, everything is there in place. It's like you're going back in time, and something I never got to do. I never got to go to the old ship. Of course, it, you know, it closed in 98, but I still never saw the ship. And to know that was the bar my father stood behind, and the walls, and just seeing everything. I take my daughter down there, her husband, our family, our friends. It's kind of like on my Jasper's tour stop.
So Jasper's, which started in 1954, it seems like it really took off in the 1970s.
It really did. You know, and I like to say in 1972, my father received the first holiday award, which back then, that was before really the stars and everything. And it was the biggest deal in our family when they had received a holiday award. You're in the same category as Brennan's in New Orleans at the time, the Four Seasons in New York, you know, some of the most famous restaurateurs. And he got to know these restaurateurs and started traveling more. Then in 74, we see the Mobile Four Stars.
So, okay, tell me about your experience with all the food around you growing up. Were you interested in cooking all along?
Oh, I can remember from the time I was 6 years old when other kids were playing t-ball. And out in the playground, I was inside at my Nana's house. Sometimes my mom didn't like that as much, but I spent more time at my Nana's house. I was spoiled. I got whatever I want down there. It was just down the street. And I'd sit on the counter and just watch her put these meals together, you know?
Like
mussels,
what?
Mussels and snails, which we call babalooji, popping out of the pot, making homemade pasta. And the family meal. So that was always something for me. And watching everybody get together and enjoy what she put together that sometimes took hours. It was a labor of love. The fried meatballs and the sauce, the Sunday gravy, and the list is on goes on and on.
Tell me about the fried meatballs and the sauce.
So that's,
I'm not familiar.
That's my favorite. And as a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, I was down in Jacksonville with my daughter and her husband, and my wife and I were staying there. And Sunday morning, I had all my prep work ready, and I made everyone and her friends, they all came over, fried meatballs, which are just meatballs. You make the meatball mix. And then on Sunday morning, you get the meatballs and you flatten them in a frying pan. You don't have to flatten them, but you eat that when you get home from mass.
You watched your grandmother doing this?
Oh, of course. I mean, every Sunday. And Mom used to always talk about this later on in life. And Mom's still living. She's 88 years old, and we still laugh about this. But, you know, she used to make 70 meatballs on Sunday. Now, you imagine, I mean, you know, four boys, Mom and Dad, friends, grandparents coming over, cousins, whoever stopped over, you know, for dinner that day, you know, employees. It was an open house.
You know, you talk about the inspiration you got from your grandmother's house, but what about growing up with this restaurant?
Well, growing up in the restaurant, I was very fortunate, as all my brothers. We started in the restaurant business when you're 8 years old. You get to work at the restaurant. So
what do you do as an 8-year-old?
Cut bread. They put you on my father put us on a stool at the bread counter, and we sliced bread and we put it in a basket and you hand it to the bus person, and they walked away with it. On weekends, we got to do this. And I couldn't wait to do that. And then I got to wash dishes. I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. But I always had my eye on the broiler man and my dad's chef, Manuel Cervantes, who was with my father from the beginning until 1977.
What did you learn from him?
Well, just watching him prep, watching him, you know, make the meatballs like Nana made, only in larger batches, but make the sauce, saute the veal, break down a veal leg every day, a leg of veal, which I don't know any restaurants who do that anymore, cut the steaks, you know, do all the prep work. To me, that's when I'm my happiest, I'm doing prep work. I'd rather do prep work in a corner, and that's it right there.
Why?
Because, I mean, you know, when you're on a line, you get that energy, and you get that, you know, all of a sudden you get that feeling while you're going, and you have 12 minutes to put this order out. It's a lot of pressure. I like to say I'm 55 years old now. I'm kind of numb with that, but I can't be because that's my life. But to me, the most comforting time for me and to really relax, I'm making a batch of meatballs. I'm making sauce. I'm creating a new dessert.
Did that prep guy, did he teach you any tricks?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget. I had to learn how to broil steaks when I was 10 years old. And we didn't use tongs. We didn't use a knife or a fork. Never a fork. You would never poke the steak with a fork. You turned it with your hand.
Whoa.
On the grill. So today, my hands, everybody laughs. Last week, I was picking up something on a plate, and they said, don't touch it. And it doesn't matter to me. But you have hands of steel, and you grew up like that. You know, learning to taste and building layers. And that's what I teach in my cooking classes today. And that's what I learned from Manuel and my grandmother and my grandfather. Always taste, constantly taste. I mean, look, I can't lose weight. Look the way I am. I try, but that's my life.
You know, I'm curious about how you balance tradition and nostalgia with innovation when you run this generations-old place. And you have your own memories that seem so important to the whole thing.
Well, it's a great question because I think still today people come in and they want always the same dish. They want something that they had back in 1954. They don't want to change. We have customers who come in who are celebrating their 100th birthday. People have been coming in since they were 3 or 4 years old and remember the experience. They don't want us to change. And believe me, they know when something changes. And my brother Leonard is very, very persistent about this. Don't change the recipes. Don't touch anything. That potato goes here. The vegetable goes here on the plate. The pasta should be served this way. And I'm very fortunate because even my assistant who's been there for 35 years, my original assistant, Marvin Lewis, was with us for 39 years. So we're very fortunate with our team that we have to continue this tradition. You know, it's
hard. Like with the mozzarella thing, is it sort of like you can add something, but you can't take away or change?
Exactly. So, you know, we added balsamic vinegar, which I'm very much against.
Against balsamic vinegar?
Sure, because you don't use balsamic vinegar like that in Italy. I mean, balsamic vinegar was not used as a condiment. The name itself dates back hundreds of years. When you taste balsamic, it was for balsa. Just back up the word itself and see what it means. And it was used. You'd get a little eyedropper and you would taste it if you were sick.
Hmm.
You know, today, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of millions of gallons are produced. Unfortunately, it's not the same. And it's nothing you would actually put on mozzarella. But, you know, I'm in Kansas City, and I give my guests what they want. You know, it's a lot of people want to fight that. My guests want meatballs. They want lasagna. They want fettuccine alfredo. They want the veal dishes. And I still add something new on the menu. So I like to call it something new and something old.
When you go to Italy, do you feel like you are... It's interesting to me that you grew up in an Italian-American household in an Italian-American restaurant, and you still feel the need to go to Italy to learn about Italian food.
I go to Italy every year. This year I didn't get to go because we were going to go to Cuba instead of our group. But I'm very fortunate since my father passed away. My father used to take me to Italy all the time. And now when I go back, I had some very good friends, Tony May from Gruppo Ristoratori Italiani, who was kind of like my mentor. I would follow him around in Italy every year. And then Judy Francini, who is the diva cucina from Florence, who I send many guests to go on tours with her, kind of takes me in today. And I get to go back, and let me tell you something. Like I said earlier, at 55 years old, I'm still learning every day. I'm studying, creating new recipes, but I like to go back to I want to see, you know, how the real Tuscan pork sauce was actually made, where they made it at, you know, the kitchens. Go back and get that feel. You know, put the rosemary and the carrots and the celery and the onions in this and make this special sauce.
What is your all-time favorite Italian meal you have ever eaten?
I'd have to probably say at my cousin's home in Gibellina, Sicily.
What was it?
It was pasta with Italian sausage and capretto, which is the goats. I'll never forget eating it. I used to eat this with my grandfather. I used to eat it with my father. And when I went back with my nephew a few years ago, we're sitting there, and probably my most memorable comment ever in my life, he looked up at me and he said, Uncle Jay, he said, this tastes just like at home. I said, Jay, this is home. This is where it all began right here. So the sauce, the flavors, they all come back to me, and that's my job, just to carry on the tradition.
Jasper Mirabile Jr. of Jasper's Italian Restaurant, thank you so much for sharing your story.
We can go on and on,
believe me. Our critics will be with us in a minute to help us find great Italian food all over the metro. Call in with your Italian food craving that can only be satisfied in a Kansas City restaurant. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we'll kick off our search for local Italian food favorites by visiting a new place, Joe's Cellar, in a surprising location. Our producer, Coy Duggar, is going to take us there now.
In Prairie Village, Kansas, just off Mission and 83rd Street, is the Mission Road Antique Mall. A sign just outside of the building proudly displays their motto, "A new way to look at old things." Inside the mall, piles of furnishings, ceramics, and overall oddities from years past adorn the hallways. It's a sheer labyrinth of baubles and doodads people in their golden years might reminisce over. The restaurant can be hard to find, but a passing employee can point you in the right direction. Eventually, you can rely on your nose to find it. Like the antique shop surrounding it, Joe's Cellar Italian Cafe likes things done the old-fashioned way. Music of sopranos and tenors from the 1920s and 30s play on speakers. Family photos hang on the entrance walls, some in black and white, and homemade pasta is served at the table. That's something owner and founder Ann Sheeta believes makes real Italian.
We make our own pasta here. Everything's made from scratch. You know, not just real Italian, but real any, you know, traditional, old-world, ethnic food is just, you just want to make sure it's sourced from, you know, local or as close to the earth as possible, at least.
Ann shows me where the pasta is made. On a counter, dough is rolled, twisted, and cut into ravioli.
We're talking tradition. This is the Sheeta tradition. Christmas Eve, we always had homemade raviolis, and so I kind of carry that over into our restaurant. We're going to serve fresh pasta daily.
House-made pasta takes a lot of effort, but that's what Ann remembers.
So I grew up in a small town north of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There's, in that area, is just a smattering of small towns, and I lived in one of them called Johnsonburg, Pennsylvania. And, you know, the town consists of mostly Italian, Polish, German, and so you do get all of the old-world delicacies. And Italian was it for us.
And as much as her dad loved Italian food, he still felt there was room for experimentation.
So my father would make all of his concoctions in our cellar. So that's how Joe's Cellar started, really. I just wanted to pay homage to what I grew up with and enjoyed as a kid.
And one of his mad experiments? Jalapenos.
Obviously, jalapenos aren't so much Italian. But, you know, it's pepper, lots of sugar, hence the candy.
Or by smoking cheese and pepperoni.
He used to smoke his in duct-taped cardboard boxes with a little cold smoke.
Joe's Cellar sticks to the family formula. That's the Italian thing to do.
The great thing about Italian is your family is your tradition. And so, like I said, our marinara sauce, we don't add sugar to ours. We don't have it chunky and it's not spicy. That's our tradition. Now, someone else's tradition might be they add sugar or they add it, you know, a little bit more chunky. They add some spice to it.
And maybe that's why Ann loves making food. But food isn't always fun and games. Sometimes there are rules involved.
My dad has a sign hanging, always has had it hanging, and it says, "Mangia e stai zitto." That means shut up and eat.
Oi mari, oi mari.
Thanks to Coy Duggar for taking us on that little field trip to Joe's Cellar. I'm Gina Kaufman. The food critics are here now, and they are going to recommend the best Italian dishes in town. Charles Ferruzza, Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Charles, start us off because this topic is personal for you.
Well, I mean, my grandparents were from Sicily, and my grandmother was a very, very good cook. And the idea that one would go out to a restaurant, especially a restaurant serving Italian food, was just completely alien to them. It was like throwing money in the trash as far as they were concerned.
You say that the cooking at Lydia's is the closest in spirit to your grandmother's cooking?
I would say Lydia's and Jasper's only because they're such a home-cooked feeling about the food there. Also, they're chef-driven where everything is made. A lot of things are made from scratch, so everything is pretty delicious, moderately priced.
What are some of the dishes at those restaurants that you would point us to?
I would point to any... Well, this is odd, but I would point to any of the veal dishes or the chicken dishes. We never had veal at home for whatever reason. And things that taste like they were cooked, they took all day to cook, are kind of signatures of both of those restaurants.
What about Anthony's on Grand? That stands out to you, but it seems like for a different reason.
Well, you know, it's easy to dismiss Anthony's on Grand for a couple reasons. One is some people might call it an Italian restaurant, you know, from Italy, and because it's real old school, and they just don't make restaurants like that anymore.
When you say old school, I guess when I think about that in reference to Italian-American restaurants, it seems like that references a specific era and a specific kind of mood. Can you describe that?
Well, it's also a specific kind of cuisine.
Seems like 1950s, Dean Martin.
Sicilian cuisine, red sauce. And like a lot of restaurant Italian restaurants of that type, a lot of them opened after World War II, and they served no matter what town you grew up in. That would include St. Louis for Mary or Tulsa for Jenny. Mm-hmm. They all had a kind of specific menu with a certain number of pasta dishes, but they were definitely also famous for garlic broiled steak and fried chicken. Mm-hmm. Now, it's really hard these days to find an Italian restaurant that still has fried chicken.
So you like Anthony's on Grand, even though you say it's easy to dismiss. Why?
Well, I wouldn't dismiss it at all, but it's easy for some people to dismiss because it is so much like the 1960s, which is, of course, the reason I love it.
Okay.
You know, it is the old kind of Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra music.
It's not trying to be 1960s.
It is
1960s.
It's just still there.
Preface this by saying it opened in 1978. But to me, the 1960s and 1978, you know, it doesn't make any difference. It is what it is.
I agree.
Plus, it's one of those Italian restaurants where you walk in hungry and you waddle out fat and full. You know, there's not a lot of those anymore.
Okay. Mary, I want you to talk to us about the other end of the spectrum. You've got inventive new items appearing on menus for restaurants you wouldn't even recognize as Italian restaurants per se. Talk to me about places like Story, the Rieger, and the Antler Room.
And I'll add Michael Smith to that. All these restaurants have had pasta on their menus in the past, but now there's a renewed focus on handmade pastas, and they're gorgeous. I mean, if you look at the Antler Room Instagram right now, they have a beet pasta that while they're making it, it's in rows, and there's just these long, beautiful purple lines before it gets cut. And they're just the most interesting pastas that are in the city right now. The Rieger has always these really, I would say, odd sounding combinations, and I think, I don't know if I want to get that. And I've never been disappointed.
Like what? Can you think of an example?
Well, I would say like a garlic cauliflower puree, egg yolk, guanciale, mint, and pine nuts is a current vegetarian one. Then they have things like duck confit with apricot and chestnuts and mushrooms.
Oh my God, that sounds so good.
Yeah. Then at going back to the Antler Room, they've got a cavatelli with braised lamb. They've got duck confit. Story is very their most popular one. It's been on the menu, I think, from the beginning. It's lobster, Swiss chard, and burrata.
With a pasta?
With a pasta. And then Michael Smith, they are now doing a five-course pasta tasting. So you get all these different pastas, ranging from gnocchi to ratatouille. They've got spicy ones. They've got wild boar. It just runs the gamut. Any ingredient you can envision is in all of these pastas.
The International House of Pasta.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and Michael Smith's new concept is called Finding Guido. We interviewed him about that on the show, and it is pretty fascinating, but I haven't tried it yet. Can you talk to me about the experience?
Well, it's his passion. It's based on an experience he had in Italy. So it's just a revamped menu. Practically everything on there is Italian. He has some of his old favorites, but mostly it's got a very heavy Italian focus, with pastas being the main feature.
Call 816-235-2888 to tell us about your favorite Italian dishes in and around Kansas City, whether they're being served at a traditional Italian restaurant or someplace else. 816-235-2888. And before we turn to those callers, Jenny, lest we forget, there is also casual lunch fare.
There is absolutely casual lunch fare to be had. You know, almost all of these places do, but I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out to Mario's Grinder in Westport. They've been threatening to close for a couple years now, and officially on their website it says at the end of this year they'll be closing. So if you like a good Italian loaf that's got kind of the center torn out of it, meatball sauce, cheese that then is then toasted, a traditional Italian grinder, this is the place to go get it in Westport. It's been around forever.
At least 30 years.
Yeah, at least. You said the 80s. I said the 90s. I mean, it's been around a long time. So this is a real classic. I mean, if you love, and they've got a couple different types of grinders, but I always get the meatball grinder with cheese. That's my favorite. So,
what a loss for Westport. I'm sorry to hear that.
I know. You know, it's been there such a long time, and it's a cute little space. But it's just, you know, I think the growth is happening the other direction, and I think he's had enough. I think he's ready to move on. But we'll miss his grinders.
Talk to me about Cascone's. That's on your list as well.
Yeah, Cascone's is a wonderful, old-fashioned, Italian, family-run restaurant, much in the vein of Jasper's and so many others that we have here in town. And I love Cascone's location up on North Oak because it's kind of their traditional, original location. But, you know, this is a place where you can get some really unique things that are total home cooking. One of the things that we were talking about on the show earlier is the Sunday gravy is what it's called, with the sheen bones. And that's basically pork neck that's cooked in red tomato sauce. And then the meat, the bones are pulled out, obviously, out of the sauce. And the meat is then shredded and added back in. And you can get it in a bowl and it's served to you. You can get it over pasta here. But Cascone's is one of the few places that has this kind of old school traditional Sunday gravy favorite that's made with pork neck bones. So I kind of always recommend that. But they have gnocchi and they have veal dishes, chicken dishes. I mean, the menu is so extensive that it's kind of hard to choose. I always find myself in there kind of overwhelmed as to what to get. But everything's really good, made with a lot of family love, for sure.
Charles, that's a favorite of yours, too?
It is. I've always loved Cascone's. Love the family. They're related, of course, to the Cascone's that own Cascone's Grill down in the City Market, River Market. Mm-hmm. And there are some really classic old school, I guess, for lack of a better word, dishes there. And they have a really wonderful lasagna. Mm-hmm. You cannot be, I mean, it could make three meals.
They have a cute, kind of interesting old school bar area as well that feels like old, you know, 1950s and 60s.
That building, the one, if we're talking about the Cascone's north of the river, it was built in the 60s, I think, right?
It certainly is. Yeah.
So speaking of a meal that can feed you three times over, I heard this, and I'm curious about whether this is something you've heard as well, that part of the reason that Italian-American restaurants serve such large filling portions, that tradition comes from an era of immigration where people had often been starving before they came.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, you know, my grandparents, when they came over, and they didn't go to restaurants, but they cooked a lot. I remember even as a kid, that thinking, are they worried that they're not going to eat tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. And yes, maybe.
And they were.
Maybe they were.
Let's talk to Al, calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Al.
Hi, guys. Kansas City, a city of food. Two things. One is a Bella Napoli on Thursday. Jake, the owner of Bella Napoli, gets together with his best friend growing up, and it's without fail. His best friend's a well-known surgeon. And they make gnocchi every Thursday morning, and it's really exceptional. It's so light and delicious. And
do they serve it all the time, or that's just a Thursday specialty?
It's only a Thursday thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. So there's that. And then this is an odd one. Ling Chang, who owns Blue Koi and Mongolian Grill and all those restaurants, is a great lady, and she and two of her girlfriends, good friends, decided to open up a small place called Anna's Oven, and it is not typically Italian, but they do Italian specials, and they have a very good lasagna. They have a great wine list, and it's a tiny little place on 39th Street, just right almost next door to the Bronx.
So you're getting some affirming nods from our critics, so I'm going to hear more from them about this lasagna.
It's also a great project done by three best friends who decided to just do something together. And Ling, like, she doesn't have her, no pun intended, plate full enough, decided to get involved in that as well. So,
okay,
there you go. That's my contribution.
Thank you, Al.
The lasagna at Anna's Oven is very good, and big and hearty and lots of layers the way it's supposed to be.
Well, who knew the history behind all these ladies that pulled that together? I had never heard that story, so there's another nice little piece of nugget of information. But Anna's Oven is comforting. I mean, it's like fried chicken and salads, and just depending on kind of
macaroni.
What night you go. Yeah, I mean, it's old school kind of favorites, but they do have a lot of Italian ripping through their menu for sure.
And he also mentioned Bella Napoli, and they have really wonderful pastas. It's hard for me to choose when I go which one to get. I like the Matriciana pasta. I always gravitate towards spicy anything, and that one is really
good. It's a good neighborhood spot.
Yep.
Let's hear from Shane in Overland Park, who has a question for us. Hi, Shane.
Hi. My question is about pasta carbonara. I've developed a taste for this over the last couple of years, starting with a Rachel Ray episode. And I've been experimenting with it, trying it out at different restaurants around Kansas City, and it always seems to be a pretty different experience at each place. My favorite so far has been in Bella Napoli. But so I have some questions for your panel here on what they think of carbonara in Kansas City, where they get it. I, of course, use the raw eggs and pasta water. I add cheese to mine, but I've kind of diverged using my own add-ons.
Well,
so,
okay,
anyway,
Shane,
I'd just like some advice on that.
Yeah, let's hear what our critics have to say. And I'm not a carbonara expert, but what, egg, bacon, what else?
Sometimes cream. Kansas City prefers cream with their carbonara, although it's not a traditional component.
Yeah, lots of cheese.
So what I would tell you is this is a fantastic dish that you should learn to make at home. I mean, it's a fairly easy dish to make. It comes together pretty quick once you learn the trick between kind of the water and the egg. And I think Kansas City's restaurants have shied away from it over the years because of the raw egg concerns that have come up, obviously, with health department and others. I think it's a challenging dish to make.
Well, it's sort of evolved, not especially in a good way, to become a version of
Alfredo.
Alfredo.
But Alfredo's not the same.
Not
at all the same. But when you're sold that bill of goods, then you believe
it
is.
I understand.
Michael Smith has it on his current pasta menu, and
he does it with
pancetta.
Yeah, pancetta would be delicious. And I think that's mostly traditional.
Well, we are going to head off to a break, but when we return, you will have your chance still to recommend a place for a great Italian dish or a perfect atmosphere. Call 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. I'll be right back with our food critics on KCUR's Central Standard. Charles Ferruzza, Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a Food Critics Friday here on KCUR's Central Standard, and we are talking about Italian food. We have a full switchboard. We're going to hear from some callers. But before we do that, Charles, you have a whole list of places that you describe as neighborhood restaurants with a mission, which is come hungry, leave full.
Leave full, yeah. That should be the mission of every restaurant, but but especially for Italian restaurants.
And so one of the places that both you and Mary recommend that you put in that category is Carmen's in Brookside. I'd like to hear what both of you have to say about that place.
I wish there were more neighborhood places like Carmen's. I mean, the family that owns it, I believe, are Spanish, aren't they? But they love garlic, so that's enough.
And, well, I know Don Pepe's paella is still on there from when they owned that.
Yeah, it's a great neighborhood joint, and I've never had a bad meal there. I tell you, it's not everyone's taste. It's a red sauce restaurant.
It is, but it is one of those where you end up taking some home. I actually have a big appetite, and I can eat a lot, and I always take some home. My favorite dish there is the fettuccine al diablo, and it has...
Because you like it spicy?
Love it spicy, and it's got shrimp and mussels, clams, squid, and it's this huge bowl, and I just want to keep eating it, and at some point I just
That's
what
I feel about their salad. They've got that chopped Italian salad. Oh, it's wonderful.
One of the other places you put on this list is kind of a newer place, Ragazza.
Ragazza. Yeah, it's Laura Norris's restaurant. Yes, Laura Norris is Italian, and it's a little family-owned place in Westport. I think it's appropriate we give Ragazza a shout-out since Mario's is closing, and she's kind of picking up the neighborhood slack there. And it's a sweet little place, good wine list, very popular bar. My only, if there is a criticism of the place, it's tiny. So it's not really a good place to walk in and think you might get a table.
Teeny, tiny.
The odds are...
But cute, adorable.
Very cute. Mm-hmm. And really warm and accommodating and friendly. So there's that.
And Jenny, you are taking us out to Lawrence.
Yeah, you can't have an Italian list and not at least give a nod to 715. It was one of the first restaurants in Lawrence that really ushered in what I'll call this new wave of chef-driven restaurants. You know, instead of just having kind of the college culture restaurants that the kids would go to. I mean, this was finally to have some chefs butchering animals in their basement, but really with an Italian theme. And the menu has settled into such a great, fun, comforting place, but it's not traditional. It's more of a modern Italian, but it's so good and so delicious. There's always something new to try there. I love going to 715.
Let's get to our callers. We'll talk to Carrie and Waldo. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning. Love the show. Always can go for Italian.
What do you want to tell us about?
Well, there's a number of really fun places around town that I like to go to, but probably one of my favorites is Cupini's in Westport. And I love the lemon chicken panini, but my favorite thing that I get there probably most of the time is the gnocchi and pesto sauce.
What do you like about it? What sets it apart for you?
It's substantial without being heavy, and it's rich without being overwhelmingly rich, and the pesto sauce is just kind of a nice, not real creamy rich, but, you know, you've got, you know, the butter and the garlic and the olive oil and lots and lots and lots of basil and everything. But, yeah.
Carrie, you're
and
making
then for
me
dessert,
hungry.
I have to get the zucota, which when I describe it, it's like, okay, I have to go get it right now. But and probably the frosting on the whole thing is, if it's not real busy and Franco's there, if you can get him to talk, the man has got just this unbelievable repertoire of stories, and he is just a hoot. So, and he's such a personality.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Carrie.
All right, thanks.
Let's talk to a caller who's going to take us a little bit outside Kansas City proper. We're going to go with Jared to Smithville. Hi, Jared.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What can you share?
Well, I first-time caller and was listening to the show today, and we were blessed probably about a year ago with a family in Smithville, Missouri, just up by the lake, and their restaurant is Venzia Italian. It's a Italian family. In fact, it was kind of awkward the first couple of times my family went there. They really have broken English, and we kind of had to work through that. But once the food hit the table, I'm not a big Italian connoisseur. I'm kind of a standard American Italian food person, and this was life-changing for me. I'd never had what people, you know, call authentic Italian. But it was like really being in an Italian family's house, eating what they would eat.
What's an example of something you tried there that you had never known about before?
I had never had a real seafood Alfredo type dish. They have a lot of seafood dishes, and I don't like heavy sauces. The Alfredo sauce is, I mean, it's just creamy, but it's not overpowering, and each one of the has a little spice to it. Everything that they make, their lasagna is, I couldn't begin to break down the flavors that I could taste. Like I said, I'm not a connoisseur of that, but it's just a solid, thick, tasty piece of lasagna, from the breads to the dipping sauces to the tiramisu.
Thank you, Jared.
Tiramisu. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So that's a place in Smithville. And now let's talk with Alex in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
I wanted to talk about Joe Vito's Italian Cafe and Bakery. It's right there on 123rd and State Line out in Leawood by McGillie's. And on cold days, they have really good meatball grinders, a really good spicy chicken penne dish where they take the cream sauce and add some chili flakes and a little bit of red sauce and make it just a kind of a unique take on Alfredo. The owner, she bakes all the goods, cookies, brownies, gooey butter bars, cannolis, Italian wedding cookies. And it's just a great place. It's always comfortable. They have big wingback chairs, so if you don't want to waddle out, you can take a nice nap and, you know, relax and let the food digest.
Well, so. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, no problem.
That's Joe Vito's Cafe and Bakery. And before we go back to our callers, we'll see if we have time. But I want to make sure that each of our critics has time. If there's just one thing that you haven't talked about yet of your favorite things, I want to hear about one from each of you. We'll start with you, Mary.
Well, I had only talked about pastas, but I have two Italian dishes at Lydia's that I love that are not pastas. One is the grilled octopus, and I love octopus most places I go. She's got it with these warm potatoes and capers and olives, and I often just have that for my meal. And the other is the bistecca, which is a bone-in ribeye with the sea salt and the great garlic fried potatoes. It's a wonderful dish.
I knew there had to be a potato in there somewhere.
Yes.
Jenny, what about you?
You know, I'm going to give a shout out to a place that isn't traditionally Italian, and it's Tower Tavern on Martini Corner. This is my hidey hole. And they have really interesting, good, solid pizzas. But I would tell you, go in there and get the stromboli. They have three different kinds. I always get mine with just pepperoni in it. And there's something about a comforting stromboli that just really does it for me. It's kind of like a pizza roll. It comes with marinara on the side. And then they also serve it with like fries, house-made chips, which, Mary, I'm telling you, their house-made chips are delicious, and pasta salad. So if you want to carb your carb, that's the place to go. And I'm telling you,
Kansas City likes to meet its meats, so why not?
Well, order a beer, and then you've got the trifecta, right? All the carbs covered. So I love Tower Tavern, and I love that stromboli. So I'm giving them a shout-out.
You know, I love a little neighborhood Italian restaurant of any stripe, but I'm real fond of Greg, is it?
Il Centro?
Yeah, Osteria Il Centro. And it's a cozy place. I think it's at least 20 years old now.
So cute. It is. You're right.
One of the best wine lists in the city.
Absolutely.
That's right. Their wine list is
with
crazy
all the
good.
Food quotes on the window.
Yes. Right. Yes. That's the one.
And boy, whoever they have cooking really has a judicious hand on the garlic and the spices because it's perfect. Mm. It's not overwhelming. It's just perfect.
I do wish they changed the menu up a little bit.
Me too.
I don't think it's
that's
changed
my only
since
complaint.
They
you know,
opened.
I think the customers might revolt.
They probably
you know that's
would.
So funny too because when Jasper was in here earlier, he was talking about that. Yeah, the one thing he can't do is change something.
Not very easily.
Release the reins. Release the reins. Let's see what else they can do.
They're afraid of customers revolting, and I understand that. I mean, you know, it takes a long time to build that kind of loyalty.
I do understand.
And they
it.
Have it.
I do understand it.
Let's talk to Judah in Leawood. Hi, Judah.
Hi, actually, it's Judith. Charles was talking about fried chicken on Italian restaurant menus, and I wanted to mention the North End. It's kind of Columbus Park-ish area, right?
Right. Yes.
And they have fried chicken on Saturdays, and it's just really delicious, and it's a really great place. It's a very fun, accessible place to go. They've enclosed their patio now with some garage doors, and you can definitely have a family experience in there. And then, you know, while you're waiting for your chicken, you can still order all these lovely Italian
copious dishes, like the eggplant or the ravioli or whatever sounds delicious to you then.
And this is called the North End. It sounds like our critics recognize the place.
It's the former La Sala's in the North Side. And they got a new owner, about 5 or 6 years ago. The food is really quite delicious. But I have been there for their Saturday fried chicken nights. And that fried chicken is great.
They're doing really well in that space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that space continue on.
Let's quickly go to Brian in Brookside. He's going to take us back to the Rieger, which we've talked about. But let's go ahead and hear what he likes to get there. Brian.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not on the menu. It was a special heavy good for a week. But it bears going back there time and again and checking the specials because it was a green polenta, which was completely herbed out of its mind. Like, it was, like, just totally green. And it had a slice of testa on it, which is I've been listening to you guys talking about a lot of pasta and grinders and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's this whole underside, as anyone will tell you, you know, the Italian frugality. And so you had this Italian head cheese that was sliced super thin and just set on top of this amazingly fresh tasting polenta.
Remind us what head cheese is for those who don't know.
it's braised bits of pig head. Basically, so you got cheek on there and tongue and snout and ear and all these things which are kind of cooked and compressed in gelatin from the cooking. And so it kind of makes like a kind of a lunch meat almost, but it's not held together by anything other than pork jello. So when it melted on top of the polenta, it was like this silky, like almost buttery kind of sauce. That and it was really outstanding, and that's like you're not, probably not going to find that like at a traditional Italian place, but it was definitely like one of the most Italian dishes I think I had in ages that I felt was really kind of, you know, speaking to the spirit of another side of Italian cooking.
Thanks, Brian.
Sauce and carbs. Yeah, you're welcome.
We haven't talked a lot about Italian meats, and I wonder if anyone wants to throw in anything else as long as we're back on that topic.
Well, Brian brought up a good point, which is the Italian sense of frugality, because the immigrants who came over to the United States in the last century, they had to be very, very frugal. They were not, I know at least for the Sicilian immigrants, they were not used to a lot of meat. Meat was expensive in Sicily, and it was used frugally in like a meat sauce as opposed to maybe meatballs or sausage or something like that. And that's why there's, you know, the mother of invention is frugality. And that's why they had to be very, very creative with very, very little.
Now, two things that have not come up yet on our way out. Jenny, you are recommending, we haven't talked about eggplant. Mm-hmm. So we've also kind of overlooked the vegetable world. And we have not talked about dessert. And there is a place where you are recommending both of those things.
Hmm. Well, so I'm going to go ahead and say that it's Italian Delight. We've talked about Italian Delight before on this show.
And it is a delight. I agree.
It's like a giant raucous Italian wedding that you've been invited to. It's like a giant wedding hall with murals on the wall, very familial, long shared tables, fantastic food. Kind of go through the line in order. But once you sit down, you know, they have great eggplant parmesan if you've ever had. Lots of salads to choose from, which is really interesting and unusual with an Italian bend.
Can I stop you and ask you what makes a great eggplant parmesan?
You know, for me, I like a little heft to mine. I don't like super thin eggplant. I like to be able to kind of, you know, use my fork and kind of get in there. And so a little thicker slices, but breaded and fried crispy that you can still tell it's crispy, not just mush. Get eggplant that goes to mush, it's no bueno.
And then the tiramisu.
Yeah, tiramisu is one of those things where almost everybody does it. It's not always made in-house. It is there, so I always get it. It's delicious.
Well, our time is up, as you can hear. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Mary Block, who blogs at Around the Block. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
And Charles Ferruzza, this has been awesome.
Thank you.
You can read reviews by Charles in 435 magazine currently. And that's a wrap for the week here on KCUR Central Standard. But you can listen back to anything you've heard or missed this week at kcur.org/centralstandard. If you didn't catch our conversations about Missouri French Creole or The Hidden Wonders of Kansas and Missouri. Those were good ones. KCUR.org/Central Standard. Our list of the best Italian food in town will be there too. KCUR.org and KCUR.org/Central Standard. The show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Tom Taylor. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the weekend is here, but stay in touch with us on Twitter. We're @KCURCST, and have a great weekend.